The First Amendment should protect all kinds of ideas, opinions, everything. It doesn't protect a right to lie us into an insurrection, and that's what they're in trouble for.
Yeah.
Are we sure about that, Ari Melber? I'm not.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Of course, he's a lawyer.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
I'm just some guy on the radio.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
So we'll see.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, in Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. It's on the Progressive Voices channel. Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. A couple of things right up front here. I am looking forward to having longtime Fox News holder accountabler and now Media Matters CEO and President Angelo Carasone back on with us for the first time in many, many years, actually, to discuss some of his insights into the recently unsealed massive $1.6 billion defamation suit against Fox News by voting machine company Dominion. Speak with him momentarily. I think he's got some keen insights on what this suit could actually mean for Fox's future. And though I'll believe it when I see it, this suit could really spell trouble for them in ways above and beyond that $1.6 billion price tag might suggest if they lose this suit.
So some actual consequences maybe for once.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Also coming up a bit later, Desi Doyen. That was her voice just now. Heard her. That was her right
that
there.
That was me. Hi.
And she'll be here with our latest Green News Report, which also happens to mark an absurd milestone. Namely, our 14th anniversary of the Green News Report.
Yay.
So we are now in our 15th year of connecting the climate change dots over your public airwaves. 14 years at it, Des, and we still have not solved global warming.
It's a total failure.
We suck. Okay, some trouble ahead. Not only likely for Fox News, but also likely, as we've been telling you, for our disgraced former president as we continue today on indictment watch out of Fulton County, Georgia, District Attorney Fani Willis and her special grand jury investigation that was looking at Trump and his supporters and their apparent broad conspiracy to try and strong arm election officials into stealing the election for him that he lost to Joe Biden back in 2020 in the Peach State. Well, a few weeks ago, as you'll recall, in a court hearing on whether to release the special grand jury's report, which we still don't fully know what's in it, Willis noted that charging decisions in the case were, quote, imminent. And in fact, just last week, the judge decided to release a precious few pages from that grand jury's report, which did not tell us too much, other than they recommended some of the 75 witnesses or so that they interviewed be indicted for perjury. That's all we knew. That's all we know. And now this on Tuesday afternoon, breaking from the New York Times. Let's see what you make of this, Desi Doyen.
Okay.
A special grand jury that investigated election interference by former President Donald Trump and his allies in Georgia recommended indictments on multiple people on a range of charges in its report, most of which remain sealed, according to the forewoman of the jury in an interview today. Quote, "It is not a short list," she said. That from forewoman Emily Kors. She declined to discuss who specifically the special grand jury recommended for indictment, since the judge handling the case decided to keep those details secret when he made public a few sections of the report last week. But seven sections are still under wraps, and they deal with indictment recommendations, according to Kors. Seven sections that deal with indictment recommendations. Ask whether the juries had recommended indicting Mr. Trump. Ms. Kors gave a cryptic answer, quote, "You're not going to be shocked. It's not rocket science," adding, quote, "You won't be too surprised."
All right.
What does that mean? And how does she know what will or won't surprise me, frankly?
That's actually a good question. But my reaction to that is, wow, she writes good teasers. She should work in the media.
Yeah, she really should. What do you have any idea what that means? Does that mean? Well, she says you won't be too surprised. Is she saying you won't be surprised because Donald Trump is going to be indicted?
Well, obviously your guess is as good as mine, but because they have Trump, you know, on audio tape, who, you know, trying to do exactly the thing that apparently is illegal under Georgia law about pressuring election officials, seems like that might be what she's suggesting, that, you know, he'll maybe on the indictment list.
You may be on target here. New York Times reports a focal point of the Atlanta inquiry is a call that Trump made on January 2, 2021 to Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, in which he pressed Raff, a fellow Republican, to recalculate the results and, quote, find 11,780 votes or enough to overturn his loss. Ms. Kors said, quote, "We definitely started with the first phone call, the call to Secretary Raffensperger that was so publicized." And then she went on to say, "I will tell you that if the judge releases the recommendations, it is not going to be some giant plot twist," adding, "You probably have a fair idea of what may be in there." "I'm trying very hard to say that delicately," she said. So I think she's saying indictments, that they're recommending indictments.
It
certainly seems like it. And a special grand jury cannot actually issue indictments on its own. All it can do is recommend what they think should be done to the district attorney. And then that decision is up to the DA, in this case, Fani Willis, to decide whether to go to a regular grand jury and seek indictments. So that's about all we know. A precious few tea leaves there, tantalizing ones.
Yes, she's basically saying you won't be surprised about what's in our report, but that doesn't necessarily mean indictments will be
Indictments will be coming, or you won't be surprised that there will be no indictments coming. I think it's the first. I think it's the first, but that's what I've been saying on this program for quite some time. All right, speaking of a bit more fun accountability news here today, before we get to Angelo Carasone, Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe, my good friend, said in a speech posted online on Monday that he has been removed as the right-wing group's leader, according to AP. So sad. In remarks that appeared to have been made at a Project Veritas office, O'Keefe said the board of the group had stripped him of all decision-making. The move comes after the board reportedly put him on leave for his role as chairman amid complaints about his treatment of staff at the organization, which is known for using hidden cameras and hiding identities to try to trick journalists and college professors and left-leaning politicians and liberal advocates into embarrassing conversations, usually taken wildly out of context in hopes of, you know, revealing some sort of liberal bias or another. O'Keefe, calls it ferreting out waste, fraud, and corruption or something. Well, the real waste, fraud, and corruption, as you'll find, seems to be coming from Project Veritas. Anyway, he said in the video, so currently I have no job at Project Veritas. I have no position here based upon what the board has done. I'm packing up my personal belongings, he said. Well, fantastic. Good riddance, liar. Go find someone else to hoax into giving you money for actually hurting innocent people.
Yeah, don't let the screen door hit you on the way out.
In a statement released later on Monday, I guess after the video, the group's board of directors said it had uncovered, quote, financial malfeasance and accused O'Keefe of spending, quote, an excessive amount of donor funds on personal luxuries. Well, there's your waste, fraud, and corruption right there, ain't it? According to the group, that included $14,000 on a charter flight to meet someone to fix his boat under the guise of meeting with a donor. $60,000 in losses from dance events. And apparently he apparently would put on these musical theater shows about his life and Project Veritas, where he would play himself singing and dancing his way into our hearts while wearing a bulletproof vest. Really, that's what he did. He's a frustrated musical theater actor, apparently. The letter also said from the board that he spent more than $150,000 in, quote, black cars in the last 18 months. Presumably that's fancy Uber rides or something, and other things. Great use of all that money that you dupes gave to Project Veritas, by the way, and their important fake journalism. Am I right, suckers? O'Keefe choked up and wiped away tears during his 45 minutes of remarks in the video. Well, I guess he didn't edit those down, did he? The announcement comes after the group's executive director and several board members put out a statement last week saying, quote, a number of our staff members provided leadership with some verbal feedback describing real management concerns regarding the treatment of people and our internal processes. Apparently, as New York Times reports on this, O'Keefe was characterized as a bullying boss who had a, quote, constant habit of publicly demeaning people. The memo from the board also painted a picture of a group that's been struggling since it became public in 2021 that it was under Justice Department investigation in the Ashley Biden case. What is the Ashley Biden case? Well, last year, two Florida residents pleaded guilty to selling an apparently stolen diary and other items from President Joe Biden's daughter, Ashley. They sold it to Project Veritas for some $40,000, according to prosecutors. So Project Veritas was not only apparently buying these stolen goods, but from the reporting that I've been reading about this over the past several months, it seems like they were encouraging these two people to steal more above and beyond the diary in order to prove its authenticity. Now, neither Project Veritas nor any staffers have been charged with a crime on this yet, and the group has said that its activities were protected by the First Amendment. That's what they always say, ain't it? But true. We'll get to Fox News in a moment. Project Veritas, which laughably identifies itself as a news organization, is, of course, best known for its hidden camera videos that have embarrassed news outlets, labor groups, Democratic politicians through the use of deceptively edited videos as they describe themselves as journalists, which they are not. O'Keefe, in fact, you'll recall, founded the nonprofit group 13 years ago now, on the basis of deceptively edited and presented videos that pretended that the decades-old community organizing group, ACORN, which registered low- and middle-income people to vote around the country and to help them get loans to purchase housing, that they were somehow secretly sex trafficking. They weren't. It was all absolute, utter nonsense. It was all a scam by O'Keefe and his partner in this, the now late Andrew Breitbart. And in fact, it was these videos that made Breitbart's name. But corporate media covered these videos as if they were real, as if they actually uncovered some kind of news. Videos which included O'Keefe dressed as a 1970s-era blaxploitation pimp, suggesting that these Acorn workers who he went into the offices of were just so dumb or so corrupt, they couldn't even recognize that this skinny 17-year-old white kid from New Jersey was not actually a 70s-era blaxploitation stereotype pimp. In fact, O'Keefe had lied about all of it, and we took great pains to make that clear at the Brad blog at the time, as these Acorn tapes were being reported everywhere, not just by Fox News, but by real, legitimate media outlets. In fact, O'Keefe never dressed as a pimp while at these Acorn offices, and I had to go to war at the time at bradblog.com with outlets like the New York Times to prove that to them after they had misreported it in story after story. And after, I think it was about 6 months or so, I eventually got the Times to correct a whole bunch of their misreporting on the O'Keefe Acorn pimp hoax. You can go to bradblog.com, Acorn Pimp Hoax, and read all my months of reporting on that special coverage. But by then, it was too late. The Times and some other media outlets, NPR and so forth, corrected some of their reporting, but it was too late. These fake videos and their bad reporting on them by corporate media did Acorn in. They were forced to shut down. Donald Trump then, a few years later, came around, promoted O'Keefe because he loved him, because he watched Fox News, because he still pretended that what they were doing was actually real. And the Koch networks and others threw millions of dollars in dark money at O'Keefe and this Project Veritas scam artists. According to AP, in fact, Project Veritas and their according to their most recent IRS filing in Florida shows that it brought in more than $20 million in revenue in 2021. Must be nice. But, you know, I tell the truth. That does not pay nearly as well. So we have to beg for $10 and $20 donations instead. Did I mention it's the 14th anniversary of the Green News Report?
Yes, I believe
which
you
does not include one fake, deceptively edited video in it. Anyway, Project Veritas' board suggests that they may want O'Keefe to come back anyway, since so much of the group is basically O'Keefe. We will see where it goes from here. Hopefully, it goes to jail regarding that stolen Ashley Biden diary, but perhaps I am just wishcasting here. Anyway, we will find out. As to hoping to hide behind the First Amendment and pretending to be a news outlet, well, Angelo Carasone joins us next to discuss the very real trouble that Fox News may now be in as this $1.6 billion defamation suit by Dominion Voting Systems moves forward, revealing both Fox's business model and what all of this finally might end up costing them. That's straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Trouble, oh, trouble, can't you see? You're eating my heart away, and there's nothing much left of me.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Fox News may be in trouble. No, really, may be in real trouble this time. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to put you through that litany of on-air, evidence-free lies about election fraud in the 2020 election from Fox News hosts like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Maria Bartiromo, much less Jeanine Pirro, Lou Dobbs, and their frequent guests like Trump attorney Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani, or Trump's disgraced former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, or God forbid, pillow guy Mike Lindell, as I realize I subjected you all to in that montage on yesterday's broadcast. My apologies. But hopefully by now you are very well familiar with all of the litany of lies that all of them told on air following the 2020 election, playing along with what we have since learned that they all knew at the time were lies, at least most of the Fox News hosts did, or at least that's what they seemed to be telling each other via texts and private emails when they were both panicking about all of the lies being told on their air about fraud in the 2020 election. And expressing concerns that if they didn't tell those lies to their viewers, the viewers would keep turning away to the even farther right-wing news outlets like Newsmax and OAN, which seemingly had zero concerns about lying to viewers, lying them into a froth that would eventually culminate in a deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, based on completely bogus claims of election fraud. According to the partially redacted 192-page motion for summary judgment filed by Dominion Voting Systems in their $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against Fox News, quote, "The words of multiple Fox employees provide overwhelming direct evidence of actual malice, including admissions from those employees proving that, quote, Fox employees knew at the time that these claims and the guests promoting them were, quote, ludicrous and, quote, totally off the rails, that, according to Tucker Carlson, effing lunatics, according to Sean Hannity, describing the very people that Fox was repeatedly featuring on air. They were described as, quote, nuts by former White House press secretary turned Fox host Dana Perino. Quote, mind-blowingly nuts, in all caps, said Raj Shah, a Fox Corporation senior vice president. Quote, complete BS. That, according to Lou Dobbs's producer, John Fawcett, even as Dobbs was one of Fox's biggest promoters of this evidence-free nonsense, which is particularly sad given that Dobbs was once a responsible-ish financial reporter on other news outlets like CNN, where actually he presented a series of very credible reports on the concerns of electronic voting and tabulation systems many years ago. Even the now kooky, if also formerly respected financial reporter Maria Bartiromo herself described a source of her frequent guest, Sidney Powell, to be, quote, kooky. Well, what was Bartiromo referring to specifically? According to Dominion's filing, quote, on Sunday, November 8 of 2020, so the first Sunday after the election, Bartiromo hosted Sidney Powell on her Sunday morning show, where Powell claimed that Dominion software had an algorithm used as part of a, quote, massive and coordinated effort to steal this election from Trump. Bartiromo said she knew there were irregularities and asked Powell to tell her about them, knowing that she would respond with a litany of conspiracy theories, evidence-free conspiracies about the Dominion Voting System Company. Now, Bartiromo knew that because the day before, on November 7, when Bartiromo had asked Powell where her evidence was coming from, Powell forwarded to her, both her and Lou Dobbs, an email entitled Election Fraud Info. It came from a so-called source of Powell's who described herself as, quote, pretty wackadoodle. As she described Dominion Voting Systems as, quote, one common thread in the voting irregularities in a number of states. This source also claimed that in the same email that Justice Antonin Scalia, quote, was purposely killed at the annual Bohemian Grove camp during a week-long human hunting expedition. Also, she said, this source, that former Fox News CEO Roger Ailes, who had died 3 years earlier in 2017, and Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox, quote, secretly huddled most days to determine how best to portray Mr. Trump as badly as possible. The author of Powell's emails, her source on these fraud claims, which she sent to both Bartiromo and Dobbs, apparently before they thought it appropriate to invite Sidney Powell on to talk about it all. That source continued, quote, who am I and how do I know all of this? I've had the strangest dreams since I was a little girl, she said. I was internally decapitated, and yet I live. The wind tells me I'm a ghost, but I don't believe it. Well, that sounds legit. No wonder they wanted to have her on. They couldn't wait to have Sidney Powell on the show to talk about that critical evidence from that critical source about the presidential election being stolen. According to Dominion, Bartiromo agreed at her deposition that that email was, quote, nonsense and inherently unreliable. Yet both her and Dobbs had Powell on the show anyway and never reported on the existence of that particular email or the source of Powell's claims, or that Trump's own senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, had rejected those allegations as conspiracies. Nonetheless, Fox hosts gave all of these claims credibility. As Tucker Carlson, while calling the claims, quote, absurd, was nonetheless worried that the Fox audience was fleeing to other right-wing networks, and stock prices at Fox were plummeting after they had been the first network to correctly call the state of Arizona for Joe Biden. There is, of course, much more on all of this, of course. As we also noted yesterday, attorneys for the far-right cable giant argued in a counterclaim that Dominion's lawsuit is an assault on the First Amendment and that they are being punished for, quote, reporting on one of the biggest stories of the day, allegations by the sitting president of the United States and his surrogates that the 2020 election was affected by fraud. Fox attorneys note that, quote, freedom of speech and freedom of the press would be illusory if the prevailing side in a public controversy could sue the press for giving a forum to the losing side. But Dominion's attorneys note that, quote, privately, Fox hosts and executives knew that Donald Trump lost the election and that he needed to concede, but Fox viewers heard a different story repeatedly. The judge will now decide whether either side here is entitled to summary judgment without a trial. Otherwise, the trial is set to begin in April. Joining us now is someone who has been watching Fox News for a very long time and may have a thought or two on all of this. Angelo Carasone is chair and president of the longtime indispensable nonprofit media watchdog Media Matters for America. He is an authority on right-wing extremism and a longtime prolific organizer taking on major corporations and, crucially, organizing the advertiser pressure campaigns that eventually resulted in the removal of folks like Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly from Fox News. Yes, actual cancel culture. The good kind, in my opinion. Angelo Carasone, it has been a very long time, but welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It really has.
I know that you and I both have been following the fake news outfit that calls itself Fox for many years now. We've known them to be liars on just about everything. What, if anything, Angelo, is different about Fox and this Dominion motion for summary judgment last week than all of the other times, all of the other many lies, you know, that we've known about regarding Fox for so many years now? Is there something different here than in the past as you see it?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. And one is the scale. There's a lot of evidence. This isn't so. I'll give a for instance. About 12 years ago, there was, after significant effort, Media Matters had been a part of this, to get some leaked documentation from Fox News proving that they lied. Because back then, it wasn't actually conventional wisdom. It wasn't widely accepted. Mm-hmm. There were two emails, just two, two internal documents, after almost an 8 month of investigation, that demonstrated that Fox producer, a senior Fox executive, was instructing Fox producers to lie, literally misinform about the temperature record because it suggested that climate change is real.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that was just it, just two emails. And it was explosive.
Right.
I mean, it was such a big deal when it came out because it was like the first concrete piece of evidence that like that it was being engineered at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, so why I contrast that with this is that that was two messages. Mm-hmm. This is significantly more than that.
Yeah.
You know, this is 200 pages of documentation that just references a fairly large, you know, body of evidence underneath it. So is the scale. And it goes all the way to the top here. In that case, it was a senior producer. Here we have Rupert Murdoch himself engaging in, you know, either tacit approval, knowingly allowing this stuff to go forward, or even directing Fox personnel and Fox executives to do similar types of partisan political work. So that's the first thing, is that I just think the sheer body of it, it's incontrovertible.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that in the so what of that is not the public perception side of it, although that's important. It actually is that it will necessarily shape the behavior of others, because it means that it isn't up for debate anymore what's being said about Fox. And so if you're, say, an advertiser or a cable company or even the president, who didn't do the Fox News interview, I would point out, before the Super Bowl, something that had always been part of the discourse.
All right.
Just changes, it gives more space for others. So the scale, the fact that it's incontrovertible, and then the third thing I would say is $1.6 billion.
Right.
That is a difference maker as well, because the reality is that the evidence here is so overwhelming that even if it goes to trial, because it's pretty high to get a motion for summary judgment in these cases. Let's even say it goes to trial. It's the evidence is so stacked against Fox right now that it's unlikely that they succeed.
It certainly seems like it. And I got to wonder, you know, I've seen a lot of coverage. I'm happy to see that there's been a lot of coverage about this in the corporate media. But they sort of report on it as, look at this, shocking. What a surprise. Who knew? And I'm looking at this and it's like, well, none of this is surprising at all. Is it me?
No, it shouldn't be. You know, their own behavior, I think, has been part of the problem, right?
Uh-huh.
That for so long, the corporate media and the commercial media has sort of, has given Fox News a pass. And here's the thought experiment I often give to people, which is that if a news entity emerged tomorrow, that did every single thing that Fox News did, every single thing was exactly the same. It just had a different name and was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
It would not be taken seriously by a single player, both in the news media, in the political world. It wouldn't matter. And that's because it would be considered disreputable, discredited, dangerous, too extreme. But somehow Fox News gets grandfathered in.
Yep.
Because for so long, the commercial media sort of enabled Fox.
Yeah.
I remember back in 2009 when the Obama administration suggested that Fox News was biased, the White House press corps, you know, attacked the administration.
Yep.
That it was an assault on press. And all they did was suggest that Fox News was being biased.
Right.
So, you know, a lot is that they've helped, they've actually enabled Fox News in a way, by treating them as anything other than the partisan political operation that we all sort of know they are.
Yep.
So in a way, they kind of, not that they have to feign it, but I do think that it speaks to what I was saying earlier, that what's presented here is so incontrovertible that even the enablers can't engage in the type of enabling or even just silence that they previously have been for,
well,
for too long.
I mean, and it's about time. And so, you know, to see this pearl clutching, oh my, look what Fox was really saying behind the scenes. You know, I've been, and as have you, you know, been covering them for years. I don't believe I have ever written the words Fox News without putting the word news in quotes when I'm reporting on it, you know, when I'm mentioning that, because it is not news. It is fake news. It is the original fake news. And yet the legitimate non-right-wing news is only sort of coming through to them now, it kind of feels like. And I got to say, I appreciate the chutzpah of the Fox News response here in their argument that coverage of Donald Trump's claims were newsworthy, despite being false.
Yeah.
They charge that Dominion has, quote, mischaracterized the record and, quote, cherry-picked quotes stripped out of key context. Angelo, isn't that sort of exactly Fox's actual business model?
Yeah, of course. And I thought that was especially, so one, you know, the level of just hypocrisy there, because that's literally what they do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is selective editing, you know, heavy manipulation. So that's the first layer. But there's another layer on this that's actually especially rich, which is that as they argue the importance of free speech and how this would destroy free speech, even though it's, you know, real industrial scale defamation is not free speech. That's why the standard is so high. You have to show that it was knowingly done.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, while they defended free speech, said this is like they should win by default on free speech. Lachlan Murdoch is suing one of the few, and I genuinely mean few, because like the Murdochs own like 70 to 80% of all the media in Australia. That Lachlan Murdoch is suing one of the only independent news outlets in Australia for writing one article that criticized him and Fox News over January 6th, saying essentially that because Fox helped perpetuate the election denial lies, that they were partly responsible for what took place on January 6th. Lachlan Murdoch is literally suing one of the only independent news outlets in Australia for making that argument. And so I think that idea that not only is it hypocritical because it's their business model, but on top of that, to argue free speech while simultaneously being one of the biggest destroyers of free speech is truly rich.
It is. And I mean, there is an argument to be made for the First Amendment, just, you know, sort of taking sure. Fox out of it. After all, the president of the United States was making yep. these extraordinary claims, you know, that a presidential election had been stolen through fraud.
Yep.
And they were simply, they claim, simply reporting on what he and his supporters, his attorneys, in fact,
yeah.
were claiming. Isn't that news? Isn't that protected by First Amendment,
yes.
Angelo?
It is. And if that's what they did, I think that we wouldn't be having this conversation.
But what did they do,
right?
As you see it?
What they did is one step further than that. What they did is make very specific claims about Dominion. So they didn't say, oh, the president is claiming mm-hmm. that the election was stolen. The president is claiming that somehow there was manipulation in the tabulation. No, what they claimed repeatedly mm-hmm. over and over and over again, despite the fact that Dominion was literally sending them messages at the time saying, hey, that claim's not true, that's not true, despite the fact that they knew otherwise, they were claiming that specific Dominion machines mm-hmm. in specific states were switching votes to support Donald Trump. In effect, what they were doing was manufacturing evidence to support the claims that President Trump was making. And that's where the difference is. The difference is not that they were covering a controversy. Everybody was talking about Trump's ridiculous claims at the time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
No one is saying that they shouldn't have done reporting or discussion about it or anything like that. What the issue is here is that they were claiming very specific things about Dominion's role in all of this. They were mm-hmm. going well above and beyond, in a way, what Trump was doing, and they knew better. That's the difference here. I'm pretty much strong on the free speech stuff. I feel very passionately about that. But I don't think this is an erosion of free speech. I think in this case, it's very different, and their defense here doesn't really hold water.
As someone who has focused for years on the advertisers for outlets like Fox, the Dominion yes. brief seems to suggest that a big concern in all of this was Mike Lindell, the owner of the MyPillow outfit, apparently and I didn't know this, the single largest advertiser on Fox, and at least he was at the time. He's a huge,
yep.
obviously huge proponent of all of Trump's election fraud claims. He was criticizing Fox News during appearances on other rival fake news outlets like Newsmax after the election. And quote, Fox executives exchanged worried emails about alienating him and sending him a gift along with a handwritten note from Fox News Media CEO Suzanne Scott, according to Dominion's brief. Does one guy, one advertiser at Fox, Angela Carasone, really have enough sway to essentially control the entire channel's news coverage of the biggest news story of the day for weeks and weeks on end? Are they reliant on him?
Yes, but I think the dirty secret here about Fox is two things. One, they don't really need commercials. They're the only commercial TV company that actually doesn't need it. They could have $0 in ad revenue, and they'd still have a 90% profit margin because they sort of fleece every cable customer in the country to paying them a very, very high fee, even if they never watch Fox. But beyond that, to your question specifically, here's why that it matters so much. Because of all the advertiser exoduses, because Hannity, Ingram, had lost advertisers. Tucker had lost advertisers over the last couple years. I mean, real significant ad losses.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to primetime, which in theory should be your biggest moneymakers because it's your biggest viewership, they didn't actually have very substantial advertising base. So, for example, during this exact time period, almost 50% of all of Tucker Carlson's ad inventory was mm-hmm. MyPillow ads.
Wow. Really?
And that is the biggest show on cable news.
Yeah.
Was one guy. Half.
Yes.
And so they literally couldn't have filled the space with ads. They didn't have enough ads in the inventory to fill the space. I mean, that's how significant it was for their primetime. So in a way, part of his influence is not the $100+ million, the almost 8 to 10% of their entire ad revenue that Lindell was responsible for,
mm-hmm.
but that he was also disproportionately responsible for sort of filling in the gaps and
right.
advertising on their primetime shows.
Now
and that
yeah.
mattered.
And as someone who has worked specifically to encourage advertisers to leave Fox, I believe what kind of damage would a $1.6 billion penalty actually do to the company? I realize it is a lot of money, but
yeah.
in a company that size, is it ultimately pocket change to a billionaire like Rupert Murdoch and a company the size of Fox? And don't they have insurance for such things? I mean, is this actually, even if they're found guilty of the full $1.6 billion, will it actually end up hurting them at all, even in a worst-case scenario, Angela?
Yeah, so I'm pretty reasonable about these things, and I'm not trying to be a downer. It's definitely an important question to ask. It'll hurt them in a couple ways. You're right. It's they have so much money and so much cash on hand
mm-hmm.
that if it was just about the $1.6 billion,
yeah.
they would survive it, probably. It would be really harmful. It would hurt,
mm-hmm.
but they would survive it. But it's bigger in a couple ways. Number one, Fox News and News Corp., the two companies owned by the Murdochs were
yeah.
on a glide path to re-merging. That deal is no longer happening
mm.
because of this trial. It no longer became financially viable. So one, it stopped a massive consolidation. And why I think that's significant is that the next step would have been to make another run at buying CNN. And I think they would have been successful this time. So
really?
I think I think at minimum, it sort of puts up some roadblocks to additional acquisitions by the Murdochs. The second reason, though, that I think a judgment or settlement or even the case itself is significant is here's why. It's not just going to end at the $1.6 billion. Because what would end up happening is that shareholders themselves would then begin to sue for breach of fiduciary duty.
Mm.
Because it's very apparent that the Murdochs made misrepresentations about the nature of this litigation for quite some time, and they're obligated to sort of be honest to some extent with their shareholders. So they made some misrepresentations that's probably going to get them in hot water. They did not maximize value here. They clearly were breaching fiduciary duty by not looking around the bend. So the Murdochs themselves actually have a history of losing these shareholder lawsuits. Part of the reason that most people don't know that they've been sued a bunch by shareholders is that the Murdochs have a sort of this reflex of settling with shareholders very quickly because of the precarious way in which they control the company. They don't actually have enough shares they're not like Zuckerberg, where he controls the company no matter what. They actually have to play a little bit of a dance. They only have about 30-ish% of the stake. So they still have to keep some pretty big players in the sort of happy
mm-hmm.
in order to make sure they always have functional control of this property. And so all that's to say, losing this is losing a lot of money. It's going to dip into their acquisition campaign capabilities. But more importantly, the significance will have a cascade because it will set them up for additional litigation that will compound the problem. They won't be able to sustain that from a financial perspective. It puts control of the company in jeopardy. It really does. And the other thing is that it's going to weaken their argument as they go through these fights with cable companies. And we saw how powerful that was with American News.
Mm-hmm.
It actually gives cable companies, which is the real source of their revenue, the ammunition they've been waiting for to say, you know what, we're not going to increase our rates this year, and you're going to take it.
Mm.
And the Murdochs, actually, Fox News can't survive unless they not just maintain their current inflated fees,
mm-hmm.
but they actually need to increase them quite significantly over the next couple years to make up for their reduced advertising revenue. So that's how this sort of fits in. It's sort of like a Jenga puzzle. Like,
it
pulling one block is not going to topple it down,
yeah.
But it's certainly going to make it a lot more vulnerable to toppling. And this one is a pretty key part of that piece. Just the tiniest little breeze will probably knock the rest of it over.
Fascinating. And don't forget, there's also another defamation case filed by a rival voting system vendor Smartmatic, who, based in no small part on crazy misinterpretations of my own exclusive reporting years ago at Bradblog.com, Fox continually and falsely claimed that Smartmatic was owned by Dominion. It's totally false. So easy to fact check. But they didn't. They just, they lie without regard for fear of consequences, apparently, because I guess they've gotten away with it so long. Angela, before I let you go, I'm not being too kind when I describe Maria Bartiromo and Lou Dobbs as previously respectable financial reporters, right? I know you've been watching them both for years. As an expert in right-wing extremism, can you explain in 30 seconds or so what the hell happened to these people? And
I know how they got fully red pilled.
How does that happen?
They went really deep, really fast. They got deep really fast. Maria Bartiromo was pulled over from CNBC by Roger Ailes. He helped sort of build her original career when he was in sort of a more professionalized version of himself, and so she really just became sort of an avatar for his worst, sort of most distilled ideas, and Lou Dobbs increased, the immigration process very much moved him down a red pill rabbit hole. He kind of bought into this idea of the Great Replacement Theory, and that, of course, colored his entire worldview.
Even though he's married to a Mexican immigrant, as I recall. It's just amazing how easy it apparently is to make otherwise respectable people beclown themselves on the right. It really is amazing. Angelo, great catching up with you. Angelo Carasone is the president and CEO of Media Matters for America. You can find their work, of course, at mediamatters.org, and they are on the Twitters still, I believe, at MMFA. You can follow Angelo himself on the Twitters at Angelo Carasone, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to doing it not quite as long in the future this time.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Okay. It really is easy, Desi Doyen, to play. for these right-wingers like Lou Dobbs and Bartiromo to just go down the rabbit hole, but it is so easy to trick people on the right, apparently, to believe anything.
Yes.
Absolutely anything.
They really, really want to believe it. And I think that that is what makes them the most vulnerable to that kind of deception.
Incurious dupes who, don't even need any evidence to just tell them something and apparently they'll believe it. And there are, unfortunately, sadly, a lot of folks like that on the left, too.
Yeah, I think tribalism has a lot to do with it. The person who is in my tribe is saying this, so therefore I have to say that I will say the same thing regardless of whether it's true or not.
That's why I always tell people, don't believe a word I say.
Check it out
not
first.
To be trusted. That's right. All right. Let's see. Oh, let's get to a quick break, and we'll come back with Desi Doyen and our 14th anniversary. What 14th anniversary Green News Report? Straight ahead on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Okay, Desi Doyen, last month at the Brad Blog at bradblog.com, we celebrated our 19th anniversary, meaning we are now in our 20th year of troublemaking and muckraking at bradblog.com. And now this month, today, in fact, we celebrate our 14th anniversary of the Green News Report, which means we are in our 15th year of doing that.
Yep.
which I'm very proud of because we have made it all of those years based only on listener and reader support. We don't have, you know, the Koch network sending us billions of dollars. We don't have a president of the United States going on Twitter and promoting what we do and telling people to give us millions of dollars.
Like James O'Keefe now resigned from Project Veritas, who made $20 million.
Yeah. Well, that was last year, their last filing in 2021. They had $20 million.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Anyway, the reason we're still here is thanks to you and your $5 or $10 donations at bradblog.com. All greatly appreciated, as noted on our latest Green News Report.
The impact of rising seas is already creating new sources of instability and conflict.
Sea level rise set to displace nearly a billion people in coming decades, UN warns. Ice coverage of the Great Lakes hits record low. Plus, Biden EPA restores limits on toxic mercury pollution rolled back by Trump.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Ohio officials are trying to get folks to come back home, reassuring residents that the air in East Palestine remains safe to breathe. Yes, pay no attention to your lying lungs. The tingling means the air is working.
This is your 14th anniversary Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, happy 14th anniversary of the Green News Report.
Thank you to you too.
Now beginning our 15th year of connecting the climate crisis dots in a way that really no one else in the nation over our public airwaves has done consistently for 14 years now. By the way, 100% listener supported. Congratulations to you, Desiree.
Thank you, and to you as well.
Thank you.
Now, on to the news.
Okay.
A series of new studies warn of the long-term destabilizing impacts of rising sea levels. Data compiled by the World Meteorological Organization shows global sea levels have risen faster on average since the year 1900 than in any century in the past 3,000 years. A new study warns previous projections of sea level rise underestimate the risk, finding that twice as much land in developing nations will be inundated by rising seas than previously predicted.
Not good, although scientists have been underestimating all of these problems for, at least 14 years.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres told the UN Security Council late last week that the rate of sea level rise itself is accelerating and warned of widespread impacts, including saltwater intrusion contaminating drinking water supplies. Guterres called rising seas a threat multiplier that will disrupt and destabilize global society. He said unless there is an organized international effort to get ahead of the problem, 1 in 10 people could be driven from their homes in coming decades.
The consequences of all of these are unthinkable. Low-lying communities and the entire countries could disappear forever, and we would see ever fiercer competition for fresh water, land, and other resources.
A different study in Nature Communications warns that in a moderate emission scenario, sea levels will continue rising through at least 2150 and likely thereafter due to the delayed response of the massive Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets. At the current rate, global average sea levels are likely to rise by 3 to 5 feet by 2100. Mm. The researchers conclude that because of humanity's delay in cutting fossil fuel use, even if governments achieve their promised emissions cuts under the UN Paris Agreement, quote, it would be insufficient to slow down the rate of global sea level rise.
An average of 3 to 5 feet by the end of the century.
Yep. In other news, widespread devastation in Brazil's Sao Paulo, which was hit with record rainfall of nearly 24 inches in a single day, which triggered deadly flooding and landslides that have destroyed at least 50 homes and killed at least 36 people.
You would think after 14 years, I would no longer be surprised by these kind of stories. Amazing.
Several cities in the region have canceled their carnival festival, a major source of tourism revenue.
I guess they have.
In the Great Lakes, a new study confirms that ice extent on all of the Great Lakes has hit a record low, even though we are now supposed to be at the peak of ice season. The historical average for mid-February is at least 40% ice coverage on the lakes, but currently it's only 6%. Mm. According to NOAA data, ice on the Great Lakes altogether has declined 71% since the 1970s. Meanwhile, taxpayers are funding the fossil fuel industry's destruction. Bloomberg News reports that even as the world's governments are taking action to cut fossil fuel use in the future, governments last year gave a record $1 trillion in taxpayer subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, the main driver of climate change. Combined government subsidies for oil, natural gas, electricity, and coal hit an all-time high in 2022, even as soaring energy prices contributed to crippling inflation.
And even as the fossil fuel companies enjoyed record profits last year.
Finally, some good news for things that breathe. The Biden EPA has reinstated Obama-era regulations limiting toxic mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants that had been stripped away by the Trump administration. Mercury pollution from power plants is a potent neurotoxin that damages brain development in babies and children and causes heart disease in adults.
Well, there you go. After 14 years, one positive story. I'll take it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your 14th anniversary Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Rock on, Desi Doyen.
Rock on, indeed.
And by the way, just to make clear, though I said there was only one piece of good news after 14 years, there's actually a whole lot of really good news in this space, in the environmental, what do we call it?
Green news, energy, politics, all
of
that. Yes.
A lot of really good and encouraging news.
We are not able to cover it all in our 6 minutes, but we do hope that people get out there and realize that there's a lot of good that's being done, and it is the tide is turning.
Plus, Desi likes to focus on the really, if it bleeds, it leads, as far as Desi's concerned in the Green News
Report. Not true, but people do need to understand that the impacts are intensifying and accelerating, and they need to be ready to understand that times are changing, the weather is changing, you got to be ready.
Thank you very much. See, I was feeling good about that last good news story. Now you ruined it usual. Anyway,
That's what I do.
That is what you do. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. That is what she does. Thanks also to my guest today, Angelo Carasone of Media Matters for America, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've ever done, you can download all of them for free at bradblog.com. All made possible by those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Twitters, and Amazons, you will find me at The Brad Blog. And you will find Desi Doyen at Green News Report.
Yes, please.
That's it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.